very interesting promotion and relegation possibilities in the United States. Certainly we have, and Peter, I'm going to go meta here a little bit. We have a community of people who are very adamant that we should be doing promotion and relegation. Some of them, I think, have thought through some of these issues. They don't, certainly don't have your expertise in a lot of cases. And some of them are just very aggressive with, let's just do it now, and it's the right way to do things. Do we sort of lose focus sometimes on what would benefit, you know, how promotion and relegation would benefit American soccer by putting this black and white, right and wrong kind of labels on some of these things?
I suppose, but I think there's a real value to having that extreme activism out there because it forces people to think about it. And, you know, that's not just true with pro-rel. It's true with every part of society. If you don't have the extremes, you know, call it the Bernie Sanders in the last election cycle, you know, maybe the center doesn't go over to the left as much as it did. And similarly with pro-rel, I think the extreme active supporters of it have a role, and it's important that they're speaking out. But at the end of the day, you know, maybe I'm too much of a centrist, but I believe there will be some sort of compromises, or call it safeguards, right, put in place to make it practical. But I tell you what, over the last 5 years, I've moved more towards the belief that it can happen. And maybe it's not in the pure sense that the idealists want it to happen. And part of that move in my mind is due to the progress the sport has made overall in this country in the last 5 years, but it's also because of the activisms of people that have been extreme on it.
Let's come to a question that I very rarely have an answer for people who call up and say, why don't we have pro-rel? How do we get pro-rel? Who needs to sit down at a table and talk things out and make these decisions? I mean, MLS is a player, NASL is a player, USL, U.S. soccer. I mean, ultimately, what's the body that has to make these choices? What does that look like for you?
Well, it's a committee. You know, it's a leadership of the various leagues and U.S. soccer.
And do you think that U.S. soccer right now has a responsibility to start pushing in these directions? Do you think that they're failing on that front in any particular way? Or is this just there needs to be more of a movement that will push them eventually?
Yeah, there needs to be discussion on it. And that's the hope of this article that will come out next week in The Howler, is that I believe through all of this, you can argue for it, you can argue against it, but I think it's imperative that the discussion happens because the potential upside is so massive that we're potentially leaving the sport behind by not addressing it.
All right. Let's come to you know, I mentioned Orange County and the efforts there for the NASL. I also know you're obviously working in Chicago and have been doing that for a time. Where do things stand in terms of NASL teams in Chicago, Orange County, if you want to give us an update there? And I've got a question about San Diego as well, now that there's seems to be a gap in that market.
Well, Club 9 Sports, and it's self-serving because I'm working with them, but they've done a great job over the last couple of months bringing new interested investors to the table for the North American Soccer League. And it includes, you know, markets like Orange County and San Diego and Chicago. Chicago, it's an interesting situation. I feel we have the hard part done, which is finding the investors, but we don't have what should be the easier part, and that's getting the proper venue. Mm-hmm. So we're working on that. We have two options that we hope to know more information about in the next 2 or 3 months. It's certainly pushed back to 2018 and maybe 2019. Orange County, a great motivated investor there who is doing putting the pieces in place, the early stages, doing the due diligence. But I feel optimistic that he'll be in place, ready to go also for spring of 2018. And other markets like San Diego and others, I don't want to get into too much information or detail on
Okay. That being said, I do have a question here quickly about, you know, and I asked Jake Edwards this question, president of the USL, when I had him on the program just a couple days ago. Is there, where does the responsibility lie to be careful about splitting markets, going up against one another? If we're talking about San Diego, obviously Oklahoma City was a recent example, and Rayo OKC didn't survive. That's not good for American soccer. I mean, it's one thing to have multiple options for fans, but we also have to keep these clubs alive.
Yeah, it's interesting. In some of the bigger markets, I think you absolutely can have more than one team. I mean, in Chicago, you know, I told Andrew Houtman last year that having a second team in the city is actually very good for the Fire because it spurs interest and passion among all the fans in Chicago. But that's a market of 9 million people, 4 million mm-hmm. soccer fans, and that's different than, say, Oklahoma City. Absolutely. The competition does bring out the best in everybody, and there's certainly a survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. And I think that's ultimately what happened in Oklahoma City. Dennis Crowley, the NPSL team owner of the Stockade, mm-hmm. had a good point about we shouldn't limit ourselves to thinking in terms of 100 markets or 200 markets. He was talking about NPSL teams or 500 markets. He said, let's think of 1,000 potential teams. And, you know, the best run and the best markets will ultimately survive. And as long as there's a different audience for each one, whether it's geographic, you know, socioeconomic, or stylistic of play or management, it will find its own audience. And the well-organized teams and the well-managed teams will survive and grow the sport.
All right, very quickly here. Let's get the phone lines open, 877-629-4614. Just a couple of minutes, if it's okay with Peter, to see if anybody has any questions for Peter Wilt as we are here at the NSCAA convention in Los Angeles talking about expansion and promotion and relegation and the health of the NASL and all of those things. I'd like to imagine a very positive American soccer future, Peter. I'm not one of those people who thinks that things are going to go badly. But what is the, you know, where do you foresee, not just the 20 teams in NASL, but ultimately how things are stratified, especially if there isn't a promotion and relegation plan in place?
Yeah, I think there needs to, for the NASL, there needs to be a new vision. If it's just, and I know our clients are telling us this, that if it's just the same structure and the same old, they really don't want to be part of it. They want to be part of something that's better and bigger and better connected with communities and leagues throughout the country. So I think the NASL will ultimately, obviously it's going in the direction with new leadership, with the changeover now, Interim Commissioner Rishi Sehgal, and better resources, I think, more of a, I'll call it a centralized league office where they're helping the teams more as part of that vision, and creating not only more teams, but more connections to other levels. And I think that needs to happen. So to answer your question, if there is not connections to other levels, I think the league may struggle. I think ultimately it really will need multi-level play or connections, whether it's promotion, relegation, or something else, to keep the interest of the fans, get the interest of investors, sponsors, and broadcasters.
Where do all the players come from? I mean, it just occurs to me that that's something we talk about with MLS expansion. People worry about the player pool. Is that an issue?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I had this conversation with Bob Bradley, I bet, going 20 years ago when we were talking about expanding MLS from 10 teams to maybe 14 or 16. And I said, is there a player pool to support MLS? And he said, absolutely. He said, for the domestic player, it's a matter of getting these talented athletes in the right environment so they can train every day at a higher level, be coached better, and ultimately there's enough physical athletes, soccer players in the United States, if they're put in the right environment, to develop and play at a higher level. International players that come over, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but it's true that it's almost an unlimited pool for the levels we're talking at.
Yeah.
The real limitation is on, call it national team caliber players. But even that pool will grow, both because of the organic over time, you know, better coaching, better opportunities. But also, if you have these more competitive situations, it will force teams to put more resources into scouting and development. And so that's another byproduct, obviously, of ProRel and some of these other expansion ideas, is to improve the talent pool for the national team, ultimately.
All right, let's see if we can squeeze in one or two calls before we let Peter go. Jonathan in Manhattan, you're on the air, Jonathan.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I've been listening, and it's always good to hear football discussions on on the radio in the United States. I say football, many will say soccer. Nevertheless, I understand that Major League Soccer, for prospective owners, they are required to pay an entry fee, I believe, in the region of, what is it? Is it $100 million, $250 million? Is that what it is?
I think it, at this point, it's $150 million for the prospective clubs.
Okay, so it's $150 million. That's for Major League Soccer. What are the requirements for prospective NASL and USL owners? Does anybody know that?
Much less.
Significantly less.
Take off a zero and maybe a little bit more.
Why is it much less? Why?
Because the value is not of the same as MLS teams. And they would tell you part of the reason the value is because the opportunity for growth is limited.
Okay, well, before, this is my opinion, obviously, but before this country discusses promotion relegation, that entry fee for the MLS and USL, if I may say so, whatever it is now, my opinion, needs to be increased. It was disappointing to me hearing about what happened with North American Soccer League in the last couple months. You would think that lessons were learned from the fall of 1983, when it was a dark period in this country, when the North American Soccer League back in its heyday with their ABC TV coverage, when the league folded in 1983, you would think that 33 years later, this country would learn.
Sure, Peter.
I think you bring up a valid point in that what we're talking about is the investors in the sport in the lower division level need to have higher net worth and abilities to operate, manage, and grow their teams. Whether that requires a increased entry fee or an increased letter of credit or some other ability to show their worthiness, I think is up for discussion. I don't think you necessarily have to charge them more in order to make sure you get the right quality of ownership. And I think the promotion aspect of a second division team to a first division team, or in the relegation on the other end, the real challenge is what you just brought up, the differentiation in the extreme differentiation in the values between a first and second division team. And that needs to be addressed, and there's ways to do it, whether it's parachute payments, solidarity payments, or other creative payments that will bridge the gap.
Appreciate the call, Jonathan. All right, I think we've taken up more than enough of Peter Wildt's time here at the NSCAA convention in Los Angeles. Peter, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck with everything that's going on across the country as soccer continues to grow. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Jason.